Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Another wonderful day.
Yes.
Ellen White says, I think it's 3:30, Desire of Ages. All along the road that leads to eternal life, there are wellsprings of joy to refresh the weary. And I think everyone will agree, this has been a very joyful time. My husband said to me, are you enjoying it? I said, yes. And as we swam in the lake this morning, oh, that is a wellspring of joy. It's just very beautiful. And that's a very nice introduction to the first topic this morning, which is water. Water is an amazing thing. Ellen White says it's one of heaven's choicest blessings. I always think what an amazing thing is water. You can swim in it. It actually can cover your whole body. You drink it. This morning with the lentils, I used it to wash away all the white scum so that you would all have very nice, happy stomachs after drinking or eating the red lentils. My husband's favourite breakfast that I could cook every single day, but I like variety. So I do cook it for him three days a week because, as every lady knows, we have to keep our husbands very happy. And so this morning, let's have a look at water. And I'm going to go to the CBD, the Central Business District of the human body, which is the inside workings of the cell. So one of the most important places that the water has to go is inside the cell. Now notice what I've done this morning. The cell is a little bit different to what we've looked at before. It's got a bilayered membrane around it. So basically a double layer membrane. So how do we get the water inside the cell? So I always ask people, do you drink water? No, I don't drink very much because my legs swell. No, I don't drink very much because I'm running to the toilet all day. And what that tells me straight away that the water's not getting inside the cell. So how do we get the water inside the cell? Because you might have noticed, 500 ml of water in, it's not long before it's got to come out. Isn't that true? It's like if you have a dry plant and you pour 500 ml into the dry plant, where does it go? It just runs out the bottom. But if you get that 500 ml and you put a little bit in, a few minutes later you put a little bit more in, a little bit more in, and maybe spread it out over even 20 minutes, you can get that 500 ml in and there's no run out. That's a very good illustration of the body. It likes it little by little. My husband is a conqueror. He conquers the day. He conquers everything. And when we're on our honeymoon, we're in Tasmania, that little island down the bottom, and we went and looked at a waterfall. And when we'd done the waterfall, he said, right, done waterfall. And then he went to turn away. And I said, oh, I'd just like to look at it for a minute. And he went, oh. And looked at the waterfall. And when we left Tasmania in the plane, he said, well, done Tasmania. So that's my husband. And when it's time to drink water, I said, have you drank water? Water. 500 ml, straight down. Done water. And I said, do you know, it's better if you have it bit by bit, maybe half a glass at a time. And as I said, he's a very good husband. He does everything that I tell him to do. Oh, I was very disappointed. He just wanted to conquer water and just get on with the day. So he has his glass of water in the office now. And, yes, he has it. He has it little by little. And he really likes that because, again, he's not rushing. So your body can utilize it better if you drink it like that. And I think I mentioned earlier, when I get up in the morning, I have half a glass of water. I go to the bathroom, I have another half glass of water. I pray, I have another half glass of water. I get dressed, I have another half a glass of water. I read my Bible. So by the time I do go on my morning walk and do my morning dive, I don't have to carry water because I don't want to carry water on my morning walk. I want to be able to do my arm exercises as I go along. We'll talk about exercise this morning, strengthen the upper body. And when I come back, then I have a little bit more water. And I aim for almost a litre sometimes before my breakfast. So that after my breakfast, I don't have to even think about water. In fact, I often don't drink water till maybe 2 or 3 hours after I've eaten. Now, why is that a good choice? Because what will water do? Yeah. To the digestion is a chemical process, and what does water do to chemicals? It dilutes it. So we should stop drinking half an hour before the meal and resume drinking about 2 hours after the meal. And that's another reason why it's such a great idea to have a big break between meals that allows you to drink more water. And I think I mentioned to you, I usually rise at 5, walk at 6, eat at 7, and we're eating at 8:30 here. So sometimes my stomach protests. You know, it's getting used to it. I didn't have much protest at all this morning. Isn't it amazing how the body adapts and adjusts? And the first couple of mornings it did protest, and I would just say to it, settle down, it's coming. And I would drink more water, drink more water. Because often that hunger pang people get between meals is actually thirst. Because the body can't often distinguish between hunger and thirst. So when my son Peter said to me one day, and it was about half an hour before the meal, he said, Mum, the water's not doing it anymore. I looked at my clock and I said, great, Peter, it's nearly lunchtime. So when the water's not doing it anymore, then that's a sign that it is hunger. So how do we get the water inside the cell? We need to look at the four vitals. Do you remember the four vitals? What's number one vital element needed for life? Oxygen. Number two vital element needed for life? Water. Number three vital element needed for life? Sodium. And the fourth one, does anyone remember? Potassium. Potassium is found in abundance in all your fresh fruit and vegetables, and actually it's very high in cayenne pepper. So when we set our tables at the health retreat, we have a little container of oil, usually a metal one. Why do we have a metal one? Because we don't want the light going onto it. Because what will the light, heat and oxygen do to the double bond in olive oil? Yeah, it'll destroy it. So we have a little metal oil pourer. We have a container of Celtic salt and we have a container of cayenne pepper. So instead of having butter, sodium chloride salt and black pepper, we have the good ones, the great alternatives. Seawater. Seawater contains 92 minerals. Of those 92 minerals, sodium makes up 30% and chloride makes up 50%. Approximately. So when the waters evaporated from seawater, the first crystals formed are sodium chloride. So what man does is he scoops that up, bleaches it white, puts aluminium in it so that it runs freely. There's your table salt. And the doctor's right, table salt is a dangerous salt. Those two minerals are so harsh, they kill the taste buds. Have you noticed when people use a lot of table salt, they use a lot of table salt? And the meal will be ready and they haven't even tasted it and they're putting it all over it? That's because their taste buds are dying. In fact, they're such harsh minerals, if you were to inject them into a person's bloodstream, they would die. This helps us to understand what the Bible says in Matthew 5, chapter 13, where Jesus said, "Ye are the salt of the earth. If the salt has lost its savour, wherewith shall it be salted? It is henceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and trodden underfoot of men. I would like to suggest that this salt has lost its savour. It's Old English. Minerals. It's lost its minerals. Seawater is called an isotonic solution. An isotonic solution referring to the fact that seawater, the mineral amount, the mineral proportion, is the exact same as in our blood. And in the Navy, in their survival manual, it states that if they are shipwrecked, they're to start sipping seawater straight away. And it will keep them alive for many days. But if they wait 3 days till they're very dehydrated and then drink a whole cup of it, yes, it causes a major imbalance because of the state of dehydration in the body. And you've heard of people drinking seawater go mad? That's where it would be. But the sailor's manual states that if shipwrecked, sip. Sip those little bits of seawater in the hydrated, in your body's hydrated state. Also in the war, the Navy used to transfuse with seawater. I was reading I don't know if you have Nexus, it's a magazine that has some weird and wonderful things in it. Some are extreme, but they had one testimony from a doctor. She said, why aren't we transfusing with seawater in hospitals? Because there's so many question marks about blood, and I don't know the accuracy of this, but someone said to me, when they, you know, when people donate blood, they would prefer people that haven't been vaccinated. That's interesting, isn't it? Because you've probably heard that those nanoparticles are causing clotting. So all of these illustrations are to show you the wonder of seawater. And do you remember what Dr. Robert Thompson said in his book, The Calcium Lie? He claims that seawater is the clearest indicator of a creator God because of the same mineral proportion and balance as is found in all body fluids. Yes?
What about the sea pollution?
What about the sea pollution? That's a good question. The worst of the sea pollution are the heavy metals, which sink to the bottom of the sea. So they're not in the water. So where the seawater should be collected is away from towns. See, if it's near a town, probably the worst thing you'll get is E. coli from sewage, but the heavy metals do sink to the bottom. So it's the fish that are the problem. They're the ones that are picking that up, yeah?
What about nanoparticles from plastic?
Nanoparticles from plastics. I guess you'd have to contact the salt company and ask them if they are testing for that and if they find any in that. That is something that's very difficult to answer. The salt that we use is Celtic salt. And Celtic salt contains 82 minerals. So where are the other 10? Well, they're in such pico proportions, and pico is a measurement that's barely measurable. So some of the minerals are in such tiny proportions, it's inevitable that a few are lost with the evaporation process. But 82 is still much more than the two. Himalayan salt. Himalayan salt is similar, but not quite as many minerals. So what Celtic salt contains is three magnesiums. Celtic salt contains magnesium chloride. It contains magnesium sulfate and magnesium bromide. Magnesium is a water-hungry molecule. And a lot of people prefer the Himalayan salt above the Celtic salt because the Celtic salt is wet. Am I right? It's wet, and it clumps together. And you know why? Because it's got three magnesiums. And magnesium is a water-hungry molecule. And we have little ceramic grinders at Misty Mountain because you can't have a grinder that's got any metal or the salt causes it to rust. And when we've had a lot of rain, say we've had rain all week, Then you see the guests pick up the salt grinder and nothing's coming out because the salt has got so moist because of the rain. So what we do is we take all the salt out, we put it in the oven, we dry it out and we wash and dry the container. And when we've got a lot of rain, we might have to do that once a week. Because I remember one lady, she was a little bit annoyed at being at our health retreat because her plane was late and everything had gone wrong. And she was a CEO of a big company, so she was used to everything being just right. She picked up the salt, went to grind it, put it down and said, "They can't even get the salt right." So I had the staff, quickly, get a little bowl, get a little teaspoon. Well, the good news, with the tender care of our staff, that lady settled right down. But I remember that was her first comment. "They can't even get the salt right." And I think that if the town had been 10 minutes away, she just would have gone. But we're a long way from town. So she settled down. But that's why. So it's important to know why that salt is so wet. And that brings me to answering the question, how do we get the water inside the cell? When you take a little crystal of Celtic salt in your mouth, maybe give it a little chew, your mucous membranes are absorbing the minerals. They bring them to the cell wall. Then you have your glass of water, and that magnesium causes the water to be pulled inside the cell. It's the quickest way to hydrate a body. So I mentioned earlier in the week on the Kokoda Trail, a lot of Aussies go and walk that trail in Papua New Guinea because their ancestors may have died there. A lot of Australians died there who were prisoners of war for the Japanese and had to build this big railway. So they go and they walk the Kokoda Trail, and there's been some deaths on the Kokoda Trail. And they die from dehydrating, but they're drinking a lot of water. But they're perspiring a lot because Papua New Guinea is very hot. What are they sweating out? Have you tasted your sweat? It's very salty. And we had a young man who just walked across Australia. It took him 5.5 months. And he said sometimes at the end of the day, he could stand his T-shirt up. It was white with the salt that he was losing. So it's not rocket science. So what do we have to replace? The salt. The only time you can drink too much water is if you don't have the salt. And so if you, and I don't say this to you, I say it to Aussies, if you're planning to walk the Kakata Trail, have a little container of salt in your pocket. It also explains why it's better on our tongue and then drink the water. Because if you put it in your water, because one lady said, "Oh, Barbara, it's just so annoying having to carry this little salt thing around." So I just put it in my water. Well, when you put the Celtic salt in the water, what's the magnesium going to do? It just dissolves into the water. So you're not actually getting the same experience as taking it onto your tongue and pulling it in. Dr. Robert Thompson, in his book, The Calcium Lie, he says you take a little crystal of salt, every glass of water, he said, all you're doing is replacing the salt you lost yesterday. We lose salt in our urine, we lose salt from our colon, we lose salt from perspiration. So obviously the more you're perspiring, say you're out in the garden and you're working hard and you're perspiring big time, then the more salt that you need. And how many people, when they're working out, start to get muscle cramps? And remember what magnesium is, it's a muscle relaxant. So I just have I've got a little tiny bag, but I've got a little tiny container that I have my salt in, and that lasts me quite a long time. Because you don't need very much. If a person's used to no salt, because often the doctor will tell them if they've had a stroke or high blood pressure, what are they told? Stop the salt. Why? Because it'll get the blood pressure up. Why? Let me show you why. So in the membrane around the cell, there are sodium-potassium pumps. And these pumps basically are working like this all the time. And they're balancing the sodium and potassium levels in and out of the cell. Potassium is in its highest concentration in the cell, and the highest concentration of mineral outside the cell is sodium. And remember, I've said this a few times, that the body runs according to precision balance. There is a little bit of sodium in there, but not a lot. The highest concentration is outside the cell. So let's say we've got someone who, let's go to the laws. We've got someone who doesn't like water, so they don't drink a lot of water. They're trying to lose weight, so they're eating a lot of carbohydrates, and it's getting pretty boring, especially when it's refined, so the table salt's going on everything. And they haven't got time to eat fruits and vegetables. They take a while, don't they? You know, the fast food's very quick. You just have a look at a bowl of cereal, pour the milk on, goes like wet tissue paper down the hatch in 5 minutes, yeah? Whereas granola, apple, they take a while. It's fast. Everything's fast today. So what's happening to his potassium levels? They're going down. And he's putting salt on everything, so where's his sodium levels going? They're going up too high. And with osmosis and diffusion, the highest concentration merges into the lower. And so what's happening to the sodium levels inside the cell? They're going up. And that causes the cell to swell. There's your high blood pressure. That's why table salt can get the blood pressure up. And so what's the person told to do then? Other extreme, no salt. Well, if there is no salt at all in that cell will explode. It's the third most vital element needed for life. But we need to be taking into our body the way it's found in nature, the way God planned for us to have it, which is buffered with all the other minerals. So when we put that little Celtic salt, and if someone's used to no salt, they come to our retreat and they say, Barbara, your food's so salty. See, those lentils we had this morning, to me, they were just right. But when someone's not used to salt, they say, they're so salty. You know what I say to them? You'll get used to it. You got used to no salt. And what an amazing body we have that has an incredible ability to adapt and adjust. Like I was saying, I've adjusted to, instead of a 7 a.m. breakfast, I'm having an 8:30 breakfast. Adapt and adjust. Praise God for the body that can do that. It can adapt and adjust. And when we look at what some people have been through, wow, the adaptation process is miraculous, isn't it? So I say that if you trained your body into no salt, guess what you can train it into? Salt. But if they are not used to salt and they start having as much salt as I have, it's quite possible in the process the blood pressure will go up because the body's actually not used to what's going on here. Dr. Lelangre is a French doctor who wrote a whole book on salt. He said, if I get a patient with high blood pressure, I immediately put them on Celtic salt. Because he said that balance of minerals can bring the blood pressure down. So if someone's not used to salt, I say start small. They might have a pinhead size of Celtic salt, whereas I probably have 5 pinhead size Celtic salt. Remember, you're the doctor. What works? What works? You've got to do what works for you. Something else is happening, and it's amazing what science shows us now about the intricacies of the human body. There's a little motor inside the membrane around the cell, and when the water rushes through under the action of magnesium, that little motor begins spinning and gives us a unit of energy. You might know the unit of energy, adenosine triphosphate. That's the unit of energy. So how many people mid-morning are feeling tired? They're at the desk and they go and have a cup of coffee to give them a pick-up. We don't need a cup of coffee. All you need to go is have your Celtic salt, your glass of water, go outside and do some deep breathing and get that oxygen in. We can't go outside, run up and down the stairs. Or a very good addition to every office is a rebounder. Rebound for a minute. Calcium. Very important mineral in the body. Remember what the nickname is? King. Called the king because all the other minerals piggyback on the back of calcium. But calcium cannot get into the cell by itself. Anyone got any ideas on what would get it in? Vitamin D. Vitamin D is necessary to get that calcium inside the cell. Glucose. It's the number one fuel used by every cell in the body, but it can't get into the cell by itself. It needs insulin. When insulin's present, the glucose comes into the cell. Now let me give you a scenario that you'll find a lot, because my suspicion is that most Swedes are eating very much like most Australians. Don't drink a lot of water. They'd rather drink soda or coffee. They're not having the Celtic salt. And they're not having many greens, which is where your minerals are. So the bit of water they have can't get in. And they're keeping away from sun. I know they are in Australia because they've been told the sun is the enemy in the sky and they don't want to get skin cancer. So they're vitamin D deficient. So the calcium and the minerals can't get into the cell. And they're trying to lose weight, so they've stopped all fat. And they're on a, because they're hungry all day, they're eating fat-free bread and all. And what's happening is the pancreas is getting overworked and they develop insulin resistance, which means the insulin can't get in, the glucose can't get in. And we've got a bit of a crisis here. Do you know what this means? The supplies aren't getting into the CBD. So the body says, what are we going to do? Then the body says, oh no, we'll just force it in. That's pressure. It's called high blood pressure. So high blood pressure can be the result of dehydration. It can be the result of magnesium deficiency. It can be the result of vitamin D deficiency. It can be the result of a high carbohydrate diet. That's why when someone has high blood pressure, what's the first thing you do? Ascertain the cause. How do you ascertain the cause? You ask them about the eight laws of health. You start with, tell me about the air you're breathing. Do you leave your window open at night? Do you have much exposure to sunshine? You're just going like this. Do you drink coffee? Yes. How many coffees a day? Oh, 15. Ah. Remember the ah? Do you drink alcohol? Yeah, I have. And as I told you last week, the lady was having 2.5 bottles of wine a day. Doing that for 3 years. Before that, for 2.5 years, she had 1.5 bottles of brandy a day. She was very overweight. So remember, you're just writing it down. You're just writing it down. What time do you go to bed at night? All of this will tell you a story. It'll give you the picture. And then you can find out why. So for high blood pressure, the first thing you do is you go to the Lord. Get them to start drinking water. A little bit of Celtic salt. And if they say, but I don't want to have the salt, the doctor says I mustn't. And then you say, well, let me explain why he says that. And then you give them the story of the salt. And then they understand. Remember Proverbs 14, verse 6? Knowledge is easy to him that understands. And I love using the Bible verse, if the salt has lost its savour. It's now good for nothing. It is a dangerous salt. It's true. So that's where you start. Let me tell you something else about salt. Lining our gastrointestinal tract, and we looked at this, I think, yesterday morning. And inside the is the blood, and you've got a little receptor site there for the glucose. And the glucose is taken by the carrier out of the gut and into the blood. But the carrier will only accept the glucose if it comes with a molecule of sodium. No wonder it's called the third most vital element needed for life. We need it. It's vital. That's vital. You could also say essential. Body cannot function without it. But there's a great deceiver out there who's deceived the whole world. Isn't that true? In the salt. I don't think there's one presentation this week where we haven't had to mention and look at the deceptions that have come in. That's why this message is, it's exciting. And it's what people want, because so many people are confused. Isn't that true? Well, I don't know what to do. They say salt's good. They say salt's bad. Who do you listen to? And when they say that, you say, oh, I understand that. It's very confusing. But let me tell you about salt. Let me tell you about seawater. Let me tell you how they make salt.
What about sea salt?
Sea salt. If you get some salt and it's white and runs freely and it says sea salt, what do you immediately know? Because this is sea salt, isn't that right? Sodium chloride sea salt?
There are some, I guess, which are called sea salt and they're not from the sea anymore because they're purified.
Well, for them to say sea salt, it has to come from the sea. Mm-hmm. But you see, this table salt is from the sea. Mm. And they say sea salt hoping that you'll buy it, hoping that you'll think it's better than just table salt. So if you're not sure, then you ring the company that makes the salt and say, can you please send me a mineral analysis of your salt? And you're always very nice. The Bible says in Colossians 4, verse 6, let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt. Look at our Saviour, our pattern man. That's Jesus, isn't it? Always with grace, even when he was undergoing the most extreme torture. The Bible says that he was led as a lamb to the slaughter. And as a sheep before its shearers is dumb, so he opened not his mouth. We have a pattern man there. Could you please send me a mineral analysis of your salt? Thank you. And then when you get it, you will see. So it's vital. So the next question is, what about high blood pressure? Absolutely, high blood pressure needs those laws. The fresh air, the sunlight. Remember, we need sun for the vitamin D to get the calcium in. So it might be an idea to ask the person to have a blood test just to see what their vitamin D levels are. Show them where they're going to get their minerals. Go to bed early. Your body cannot heal from anything unless you go to bed early. Exercise. One of the reasons exercise is so important with high blood pressure is that when you exercise, you take pressure off the heart and ease it out to the extremities. So someone can have high blood pressure reading, get onto the exercise bike and exercise fast, do some of the interval training, which we're going to look at, and that can actually get the blood pressure down. It can ease it out. Proper diet. What would be the best diet for someone with high blood pressure? The three essentials.
Yeah.
So that's high
fiber.
Generous proteins. And healthy fats. Healthy fats meaning fats that have not been refined, have not been extracted with heat and chemicals. Fats as much as possible in their healthy state. Because often you'll find with high blood pressure the person is overweight. And so that will also help. So what's another great way to get the weight down? Have breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, and then a very light evening meal. So what else can we do? We've implemented a better diet and timing. We've implemented an exercise program. We've shown them how to drink more water. We've also encouraged them to trust in God, in this amazing body that he made with its inbuilt ability to heal itself. So what else we can do is magnesium. Now, the reason magnesium is important is because the heart is a muscle and magnesium is a muscle relaxant, and so it relaxes the heart at rest. So your systolic reading is the high one, your diastolic is the low one, and they like the bottom reading never to go above 90. So they like to keep it under 90. So if the diastolic is high, magnesium can help by bringing it down. Number two, Psalm 104, verse 14, the Bible says, God gave herbs for the service of man. And there is a herb that directly affects the heart. It's called the hawthorn berry. And the hawthorn berry directly affects the heart. If the blood pressure's high, it'll bring it down. If it's low, it'll bring it up. How does it do that? Well, Psalm 104, verse 14 explains. God gave herbs for the service of man. It's like the cayenne pepper. When you take it and it gets into your blood, it opens the capillaries. But if there's any bleeding, it'll constrict the capillaries. Medicine calls it synergism, working with the needs of the body. And this, isn't that our third one? Cayenne pepper? Cayenne pepper does three things directly that helps with strokes, high blood pressure, heart disease. Does three things. Can anyone tell me what one is?
Oxygen.
Thins the blood. Thins the blood. And it opens the capillaries. And it strengthens the arterial wall. They're all things that are very much needed in a state of heart disease.
Strokes, yeah?
Stretching exercise, would it help to let the capillaries go?
Stretching? Somewhat, yeah, somewhat. So the hawthorn berry strengthens the heart. And what the hawthorn berry is able to do is bring heart arrhythmia back to normal. You know the uneven heartbeat? The two, number one, big contributing factors to the heart arrhythmia is coffee, caffeine. Because when a person takes a cup of coffee in, there's a crisis response in the body. And the other is allergy to a certain food. It's a certain food that Ellen White predicted would be tampered with. It's a certain food that went through intensive crossbreeding in the 1950s. and they rushed it through so much that there were no safety studies, what would this certain food be? Wheat. Wheat. And remember, we looked at how if the gut is compromised, it can't knock off that morphine bit. It's very hard to digest efficiently and effectively. So you've got those aspects too. So the fourth thing to do with heart disease is cease the two main disruptors, caffeine and wheat. How much hawthorn berry? I think when we looked at herbs, I mentioned that the rule of thumb is 1 teaspoon of herb to 1 cup of water. But with the hawthorn berry, you can double the strength. So 2 teaspoons to 1 cup. And because they're dried berries, how would you prepare them? Simmer. Yep, a simmer, yeah?
There's also an extract I have seen.
Yes, yep, you can get an extract. Ideally, it's with glycerin. We never advise taking alcohol by mouth. If a person has an alcoholic tincture of hawthorn berry, they can rub it on their skin. And the skin will take up the actives from the herb, but not the alcohol. So that is an option. And when there is a tincture, or it can be in tablets or capsule form, that's a more concentrated dose. And a lot of people find that easier. So the tablets we sell at our retreat were 1,060 milligrams per tablet. So that's quite a lot. So if someone's got high blood pressure, they could take 3 of those a day. And then as the blood pressure comes down, they can ease off the medication but maintain that. And let's say they ease off the medication but the blood pressure goes up. Well, they can double this dose. It's a very safe herb.
6 times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or 2-3 times a day. Yes?
What blood pressure is dangerous to the blood pressure?
Well, this is a very interesting question. What blood pressure is dangerous? So what most physicians agree on, that about 120 over 75 is a nice blood pressure. 60 over 44, bit low. But do you know what I find? There are some people who have that and it's not a problem. It's only a problem if you're passing out all day, then it might be a bit low. And often I find if someone starts to implement the laws, implement this, but they're a little bit scared or unsure and they really don't want to stop their medication, it can take them too low. The hawthorn berry, the cane, the magnesium, that will never take them too low. But the medication will, because the medication just says, I've got a job to do whether you need it or not. So we probably don't want 200 over 100. That's that's a little too high. But what the doctor would prefer not, so maybe 150 over 90, most doctors think you've got to start doing something if it's that or higher. Does depend on the age, does depend on the person. We had a lady doing our program at Alabama, and the staff said to me, Barbara, can you please look at this lady's blood pressure? Her blood pressure was about, I think it was 160 over 95. And I said to her, your blood pressure, it's 165 over 95. She said, yeah, it's always like that, don't bother me. Okay. And she was 40, she was very fit, So you see what I'm saying? Sometimes there are variations. That's why I don't react too much when you see it. And one lady, her blood pressure was something like 250 over 100. She was quite overweight. She was on three different medications. I said, wow, it's very high. And because she was so big, she could not exercise. She was about 150 kilo. You know, I'm, what, 49 kilo. She's 150 kilo. She's huge. So it's very hard for them to exercise. And sometimes if they get on your equipment, they'll break it because they're so big. So what we did, we got one of those fit balls, you know, those big blow-up balls, and we got her to sit on it, and she just started up and down, but she had to hold on to something. And when you're on that fit ball, your core muscle is constantly holding so you don't fall off the fit ball. So it seems like a small exercise, but remember, this lady could hardly do anything. I said, your blood pressure's so high and you're on three medications. I said to her, you know what I'd do? I said, stop your last one and keep on your first two. She said, okay, it doesn't seem to be doing anything. And it didn't change anything. It turned down a tiny bit. And what we find, in a week, you won't get a big change in blood pressure. That's something that will change over time. Anyway, she emailed me back about 3 months later. She said, I stopped my other medication and my blood pressure, you know, it didn't go any worse. And she said, it has come down a little bit. She said, it's gone from, oh, it was just ridiculous. It was something like 250 on 120. She said, it's come down to, you know, about 200 on 100. I said, oh, that's much better. She said, I went to the doctor the other day, took my blood pressure, asked me about the medication. I told him I'm stopped too. And she said, he hit the roof. And she said, mate, it was 250 on 120 on your medication. And you went quiet then. But where that lady's blood pressure will start to drop is as she loses weight. As she loses weight and she implements these principles, little by little they'll come down. So we had a guy named Henry, and he attended our program. It was about 15 years ago, but it's a remarkable story. He was a high court judge, but he'd retired. So he was about 69. He was probably about 40 kilos overweight. And he was on medication for blood pressure, for cholesterol, for blood thinning, for blood sugars. And he was also on medication for gout. And the sixth one was on for stomach ulcers. And I said to him, are you interested in coming off any of your medication? He said, no, thank you very much. I'm very happy with my medication. I have the best specialists in the city. And I totally respect that. But we did put him on the hawthornberry. We made up a tea every day and he drank about a litre of it through the day. We had him on magnesium. And we asked his permission to give him some cayenne pepper. He said, yes, I'll have that. Now, not much difference in the week. He went home and he bought a whole bag of hawthornberries. And some people buy a bag of hawthornberries and they make up the tea in the morning and drink it through the day. And also take the tablets if they're out for the day or travelling. So I got a call 4 months later. He said, Barbara, could I visit? He's a very distinguished man. He said, I'd like to get some hawthorn berries and see if I can get some of my friends off their medication. I said, come for lunch, Henry. Now, when I opened the door, I did not recognise Henry. In 4 months, he'd lost 20 kilos. He said, I can do my button up now. All the puffiness and redness from his face had gone. He looked amazing. He said, I've got a few more stories for you. He said, sit down. He said, I went to the doctor a couple of weeks ago and the doctor took my blood pressure and got up and went to walk out of the room. And Henry said, what are you doing? He said, the machine's broken. He said, why do you say that? He said, well, it says your blood pressure's 120 on 80. He said, it must be broken. And Henry said, that's my blood pressure now. And he went, His blood sugar was normal. His blood thinning was normal. His blood cholesterol was normal. He had no more gout. He had no more stomach ulcer. So guess who took him off his medication? His doctor. Because the doctor knows if he stays on medication, his blood pressure will go too low, his blood thinning will go too low. Can you see what can happen? And he said, and the other good news is the doctor says, I don't have to have my total knee replacement operation anymore. Because the weight is not coming down on those knees. Knees buckle under the weight. So when someone's 150 kilos and says, what can I do for my knees? You have to be as gracious and as tactful as possible to tell them they've got to lose weight. So I say, well, what would really help is some weight loss, and I can show you how to do that. You see that? So as tactful as possible.
Yes? So you put him on a weight-loss diet?
Actually, I didn't. It's just that program. And I said to him, Henry, tell me about breakfast. He said, well, I have a big spaghetti bowl, which is a big bowl. And he said, and I have some whole grain cereal, sometimes millet, sometimes rolled oats, sometimes... He said, I've got a crock pot, I do it overnight. He'd listened well. And he said, and then I have cut up fruit on that, and I have maybe some coconut cream. Did you hear that? 20 kilos lost on coconut cream every day. He said, and I have a slice of sourdough toast with avocado and tomato. Now, that's not a light breakfast, is it? He said, I do not eat again till lunch. He was a bachelor. He said, then I have a big salad. I have some vegetables, baked, steamed or stir-fried. I have some form of protein. He said, some sort of legume that you've taught me. And he said, I cook it up and I freeze it into bits. And I might have a slice of sourdough toast with avocado and tomato. And then I remember what he said next. He said, and I do not eat again till breakfast. I thought he'd be a very good judge, very decisive. Incredible results. Incredible results. And this is a very good story because he didn't stop his medication. But what he did was he implemented all of this and he got results to the point where his doctor says, well, mate, we're going to start taking you off this stuff. Some people choose to just do it themselves. Some people choose to work with their physician. I think it's great to work with your physician because they need to see, wow, this is powerful. But as the local doctor said to me, he said, I envy you, Barb. He said, people come to you because they want to get better. He said, I don't have that. He said, people come to me because they want the script. So when we did a program where we had about 15 Aboriginal ladies, because in Bellbrook, the local town where he's the doctor, big Aboriginal community, and they eat a lot of carbs. And with Australia, there's a lot of handouts, a lot of them are on benefits, so they just go for the fast food. A lot of them are overweight. In fact, one Aboriginal woman, she was the elder in the town, she said, there's a diabetic in every house in Bellbrook. So we did a program where we showed them and what to do. And we wondered, how will we get payment for this? And our maintenance man, he's an Aboriginal man named Dave. And when I saw Casper, he said, how's Dave? Dave Babongi, that's a very Aboriginal name. Michael said to him, Dave, I'm going to drastically cut the price. It's only going to cost them $300 for 5 days. and they'll do all the washing up and do all the laundry. So we're sort of cutting down our staff so we can have a cheapest possible program for them. He said, get them on pension day. It's on Thursday. If you get them then, when they get their money in, because they're a very large-hearted, warm people, so that they give their money away too, and unfortunately sometimes it's to their sons who are drinking. So he said, that's when you get them. So we did it. We did it. And I remember every day they'd say to me, Barb, when are we get the bread? When's the bread coming? We want bread. I said, I'm going to show you life without bread. Because they just about live on it. In Australia, you can get a whole loaf of white bread for 99 cents. So you see, it's cheap food. And the local Doc Appleton, Paul Appleton, he said to me, do you know what a lot of them live on? White bread, margarine and tomato sauce. It's just cheap. It's just cheap. So you see, there's a re-education. What did Ellen White said in page 127 of the Ministry of Healing? The only hope of better things is the education of people in right principles. So that's the beauty of the retreats, is education, showing them and showing them the whys. So on the last day, we did give them some sourdough bread. But you see what they say? But that bread costs $9. We can get it for 99 cents. And we'd say, one slice of that bread has more nutrients than that whole loaf. And there's a health speaker in America. It's very well built. He stands there with a loaf of white bread and goes and squashes it down. Because it's full of air too, you know, squashes it right down. And they put a lot of sugar in it to get the yeast to rise quickly. And they bake it 10 minutes in really high ovens with a lot of steam so it doesn't burn. So they used to call bread the staff of life. This is the staff of death, this stuff. So for many reasons, not only the hybridization of the wheat, but also the wheat in Australia is grown with a lot of chemicals, the Roundups, and there's nothing about it that I can say is it's a good bread. So again, education. And when you don't give them bread, then you show them what else they can eat, all the other things that they can eat. Anyway, the point of me telling you this story was really a week later, Doc Appleton rings up. This is a week after the end of the program. He said, Barb, what have you done? Wow. Within 48 hours, the diabetics were having to reduce their medication. Just incredible. And that's when he said, I envy what you do. There are some women who are about to retire. They went back to work. It's a powerful thing to be able to do that. And we have seen many people conquer their blood pressure. Again, you might not see a big difference in a week, whereas with diabetes, you'll see a difference in 48 hours. But with the blood pressure, it can take a bit longer. And one lady, she came to me, I think it was Tuesday, and she said, Barbara, at 5:30 this morning, my blood pressure was this. And then I took it here and it was this. She said, what should I do? I said, stop taking your blood pressure. Put that blood pressure machine away. Because it changes. And when you're stressed, it changes. So when the 150 lady who was on 3 bottles of wine a day, when she came to us in the health retreat in the UK, when she came in, she's puffing like this after coming up 3 stairs. I said, we won't be taking your blood pressure this morning. Because after, you know, the stress of it, So it changes all through the day. That's why I don't really worry too much about it. So they're incredible stories of an incredible body that has an inbuilt ability to heal itself. Yeah?
The heart pumpers, can they also adjust low blood pressure?
Yes.
That's good.
Yes. Low blood pressure isn't quite as common as high. My blood pressure's very low. I think it might sit at about 100 over 65. Don't bother me. I don't pass out. And I think some would classify that as a little too low, but it's really in comparison to so many people's are just too high. Yes?
Do you take the hawthorn berries raw as well? And if not, why not?
It's very hard to get the hawthorn berries, and they're only producing at a certain time of the year. And also, you would have to eat a lot, and they're not very nice, and they've got a big seed in them. But when you make a tea with him, you're concentrating the actives in that tea. So, and of course, as a tea, you can drink it regularly through the day.
How is Celtic salt produced?
How is Celtic salt produced? It's a hand-harvested sea salt, hand-harvested in the Celtic Sea in France. So, you know, the question arises too, is it pure? Is it? And the seas aren't, you know, there's a lot of rubbish in the seas now. A lot of things are dumped in the sea. And it's in an area where there's no industry nearby. And remember, with the heavy metals, they sink to the bottom. So the Celtic salt is quite a pure salt. So now I want to have a look a little bit more at water. Now we've seen how you can get the water into the cell. And I'm going to refer to a book called One of the Body's Many Cries for Water by Dr. Batman Gehaldij, and we'll call it Dr. B. He's an Iranian doctor, and he was put into prison as a political prisoner in Iran. And because he was a doctor, everyone came to him. And he didn't have anything, so he just gave them a glass of water. Everybody that came to him, every 15 minutes, after 15 minutes, have another glass of water, have it. And he only did it because he had nothing else. But everybody's problems started to heal. And he scratched his head. He only did it because he had nothing else. The people having severe asthma attacks, the asthma eased. The people with stomach ulcers, it eased. The people with constipation, it eased. The people with arthritis, the pain went away, and everyone said, oh, we've got the best doctor in this hospital. He's fixing us all. And yet all he had was water. And thus the title of his book is One of the Body's Many Cries for Water. So if we're travelling and Michael says, I'm getting hungry, I say, must be one of the body's many cries for water. The other title to the book is He's Not Sick, He's Thirsty. And the other title to the book is Don't Treat Thirst with Medications. So I want to show you one of the first places that water is taken from. Lining the gastrointestinal tract, as we looked at yesterday, is a thick mucosa wall. And do you remember I explained how it's 99% water?
Yep.
And inside that thick mucosa wall is sodium bicarbonate. Yep. And we looked at why there's sodium bicarbonate in there, so that when the stomach acid, if some stomach acid does get through the lining of the gastrointestinal tract, that mucus lining, the sodium bicarbonate will neutralize it. So that's all the protection against the stomach wall breaking down. In a state of dehydration, one of the first places that the water is taken from is the lining of the gastrointestinal tract. So now we've got a thin lining. And it is so thin that the sodium bicarbonate basically isn't present there. And so what's going to start happening now, students, is the hydrochloric acid can start eating away at the lining. To explain this, I'm going to give you a story. And after this story, we'll have a break, and then we'll go a little bit further. I had a couple come from South Africa, and that was before COVID. But I guess you all know now that Australia has just passed a law you don't have to be vaccinated to go to Australia. Praise God. We're just waiting for the US now. Surely it'll come soon. So they came to Misty Mountain, and I think I mentioned it briefly yesterday. The lady did a very wise thing. She paid all the money, and that's the only reason he came. And every question I asked, it was just yes, no. I said, do you drink water? Yes, 2 litres a day. And because he was so resistant, I just quickly moved on. I said, do you want any medication? Yes, I'm on a different antibiotic every month to kill Helicobacter pylori in my gut. And I have had gut problems for 25 years. I said, oh, are you interested in any alternatives? No, thank you very much. I'm very happy with my treatment. How long have you been on this treatment? Oh, I think I'm going into my 4th month. So that's the 4th month of antibiotics. I said, what was the last test you had? Because they can do a breathalyzer test now and pick up Helicobacter pylori. He said, we're still there. Now, I'm not criticizing this man. Every month they do a different antibiotic. And what they're hoping is they'll finally get an antibiotic that will wipe it out. At the end of the first lecture, when I explained about this body that we live in and its inbuilt ability to heal itself, he and his wife came straight up to me and they said, that made so much sense. We're interested. What do you suggest? And I always say, I have no authority over your medication, but I can tell you what I do, because only you and your doctor have authority over your medication. I said, if it was me, I would stop the medication and we will come in with a herb. What was the herb we gave him? Cyprium. Cyprium coats, soothes and heals the lining of the gastrointestinal tract. At the end of the week, a very happy man sat in front of me. He said, I've had no stomach pain for 2 days, first time in 25 years. Isn't that incredible? He said, and I've worked out the problem. I like to hear that the best. He said, I've worked out the problem. He said, I was drinking no water between meals and I was drinking almost a litre of water with every meal. Can you see what's happening between meals? Is this mucosa line is so thin. So let me show you, let me illustrate exactly what's happening here. Now, do you remember our first meeting where we looked at how our body's own microorganisms can evolve into a bacterial form? And do you remember what they are, the cleanup team? So because he's dehydrated, he's got the acid is coming through to the lining of the stomach and eating it. Our body's own microorganisms evolve into a bacterial form. And this one is Helicobacter pylori. And it starts eating up the dead tissue. Chomp, chomp, chomp. Okay? So a doctor comes in, does a test and finds Helicobacter pylori and says, I found the cause of all your problems. You've got Helicobacter pylori. But is that really the problem? Dr. Batman Gehaldi said at the time of writing his book, he's healed 3,000 cases of stomach ulcers with water alone. Because what does drinking water do? Immediately thicken that. So let me finish my scenario. So Helicobacter pylori is very active there. And then it's breakfast. As soon as we smell and think food, even before Grace is finished, you know your digestive enzymes are getting ready. Do you remember the experiments done on Pavlov's dog? It starts. So hydrochloric acid, remember our wonderful antifungal, antimicrobial present? It becomes active, but before it's got a chance to go down and deal with these guys, the person has a big drink of water. And what does that do to hydrochloric acid? Waters it down. And Helicobacter pylori goes, whew, that was close. Chomp, chomp, chomp. He came to the retreat. He learnt about the dangers of drinking with the meals. He started to drink between the meals. It was not easy at first because he was in the habit. He said, when I sit to the meal, I keep reaching for the glass. But he did admit because he sat down hydrated, he realized it was a habit. And that's also what we have to deal with is our habits. And you will also see this with your guests, yes?
I read many years ago about the doctors, they were confused because people with Helicobacter pylori, they didn't have the ulcers and others did. So they were confused, why is it
that's ulcers? Right. So there's this confusion. If someone says, I've got Helicobacter pylori, I said, congratulations, we all have. It's only when it's out of control. And if it's out of control, why is it out of control? And so he came to Misty Mountain Health Retreat. He started drinking water between meals. What did this do to the mucosa lining? It immediately thickened it. And the slippery elm certainly helped a bit. So breakfast comes. Hydrochloric acid's released. Comes down, wipe out, wipe out, wipe out, wipe out. And he was a happy man with a happy stomach. See, what happens is when he's on the antibiotic every month, the antibiotic comes in and they couldn't keep him on antibiotics non-stop. So he was on antibiotics for 2 weeks every month. So what happens when the antibiotic comes in? It kills off the Helicobacter pylori, but because the damage is still there, what are the cells evolving into again? More Helicobacter pylori. So when someone has Helicobacter pylori, I look at their hydration and then I look at boosting their hydrochloric acid. Because if our hydrochloric acid levels are as they should be, then Helicobacter pylori can't get out of control. You see that? Yeah?
I have a friend who wanted me to ask about Streptococcus and how that is in the body and what you can do with it. Is it a similar situation?
It is. It is. But it's one has to find out why it's there. And remember what Beauchamp said, disease is born innocent of us. We're exposed to microbes all the time. How they manifest themselves in our body is really a state of the body.